From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Open lines later this hour, next hour. His name is John Zaffis, a top paranormal researcher, nephew of Ed and Lorraine Warren of the Amityville Horror Story. We're going to be talking about possessions and exorcisms. But first, some stories of the day. First of all, in Phoenix, kind of a very tense situation going on there tonight. The 1.4 million residents of Phoenix have been warned to boil their drinking water or use bottled water as a precaution because of problems at treatment plants, and then to take some very conservative measures. Apparently, muddy water stirred up by recent storms flowing into one of the city's two operating water treatment plants, reducing the output of that plant. Two other treatment plants were shut down for maintenance, and the fifth was closed because it was flooded by the storms, leaving only one of the city's five water treatment plants producing at full capacity. Cloudy water coming from taps does not necessarily have serious health effects, according to the Phoenix Water Services Department. However, the suspended particles causing the cloudiness could interfere with water disinfection, providing a medium for bacterial growth and indicate a presence of disease-causing organisms. The FBI says the possible terrorist plot reported against Boston by a tipster last week was a false alarm. A law enforcement official in Mexico said that a suspected smuggler made the story up to get back at people who failed to pay him. There were, in fact, no terrorist plans or activity underway, according to an FBI statement. The official from the Baja California Attorney General's office also said that the men told investigators the claim was nothing more than a tall tale. Jose Ernesto Beltran Quinones was detained over the weekend in Mexicali, a Mexican border town near San Diego. His son, also named Jose, was detained. According to law enforcement officials, the two men were involved in smuggling Chinese immigrants across the border and told investigators that smugglers had squabbled over a deal and that one had anonymously called in a false tip to U.S. authorities as revenge. And a story we reported on last night, four Chinese nationals who were arrested while being smuggled into the U.S. from Mexico have no connection to what was then thought the terrorist activity that was heading out for Boston. The four men and women were arrested on board a private plane in a Cessna 172 as it landed at Stinson Field, which is a small airport near San Antonio, Texas, last night. The pilot, identified as a Mexican national, was also arrested. The case raised alarm bells because a tipster told the federal authorities last week that these Chinese nationals were trying to do something, bringing in a dirty bomb. Up to 300 Hindu pilgrims are feared dead and hundreds injured during a stampede at a Hindu festival in India. The stampede happened during a pilgrimage to a remote temple in western India. Officials say thousands panicked during a religious procession after fire broke out in a roadside stalls. Many pilgrims were crushed and burned to death as the fire forced crowds in a narrow stairway leading to the hilltop temple. A medical journal published a study of coronary disease related to the anti-inflammatory drug Vioxx after withholding the report because the researcher said that he had been threatened by superiors at the Food and Drug Administration. The Lancet, which originally planned to publish the paper on November 17th, released the study online. Dr. David Graham, who works in the FDA's Office of Drug Safety, said that he was firmly discouraged from publishing his data questioning the safety of Vioxx, which was withdrawn from the market in September. He says, "I was sent an email by one of my supervisors threatening me with severe consequences if the paper was published." The FDA earlier agreed that the study should be published. Graham's conclusion was that the drug was responsible for 88,000 to 140,000 excess cases of serious coronary heart disease that had previously been disclosed. New Jersey's acting governor Richard Cody has urged President Bush to lift restrictions on federal funding for stem cell research, given a recent report that says that available human embryonic stem cells are contaminated. Cody, in a letter to the president, challenged Bush's executive order restricting federal funding for stem cell research to only those lines or batches of cells that existed when the order was signed in 2001. Citing research released on Sunday, Cody says that the available stem cells were contaminated with an animal molecule and may not be suitable to treat people. The research by the University of California at San Diego and the Salk Institute for Biological Studies at La Jolla said the stem cells were contaminated with a foreign molecule from mice. In Italy, a forgotten workshop of Leonardo da Vinci, complete with 500-year-old paintings on plaster and a secret room to dissect human cadavers, has been discovered in Florence, Italy. The find, they say, is just tremendous. They said, well, there's no doubt that this is one of the workshops of Leonardo da Vinci. Scientists will comb data sent back from Titan by the Huygens probe for the chemical signature of life in a bid to identify the moon's source of methane. Methane is constantly destroyed by UV light, so there must be some source within Titan to replenish the atmosphere. Life is possible, some say unlikely, but the source of this hydrocarbon, along with geological processes, is up for doubt. The surface is too cold for biology, they say, but microbes could survive in an ocean with Titan. We do have an opportunity for you to celebrate, by the way. Richard C. Hoagland will be with us in just a moment because the Mars rover opportunity is 1 year old today. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, kind of it's a time for a celebration, an opportunity to celebrate. Richard C. Hoagland, our guest, EnterpriseMission.com. Did you ever believe that these rovers would still be working a year later, Richard?
Yes and no. The yes part is the technology and the engineering, because we know that when we put things into space, they have inevitably lasted a lot longer than the nominal sticker price, sticker date. I mean, we've got some satellites out there that have been functioning for over 20 years, George, and they were designed for 6 months. The problem with Mars is when you put rovers on Mars and you strain them to their limits, you drive them miles as opposed to a few hundred feet, and they're in an environment where it's dusty, 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 and the solar panels are getting covered with more and more dust, and the power is going down, 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 and the temperatures as winter approaches are going down, down, down. Those things are what we thought would do these little guys in, and they haven't.
The batteries are just as strong, aren't they?
Well, the batteries are, of course, recharged by the solar panel.
Uh-huh.
The batteries were made to survive many, 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 many rechargings. The problem was always, you know, the weak link in the chain was always the solar power.
They'd get dusty.
They would get dusty, and you don't have any windshield wipers, and there's no rain on Mars, and et cetera, et cetera. And then a few shows ago, two or three times ago when I appeared, we talked about this amazing miracle on the Opportunity rover, the one that we're celebrating the one-year anniversary tonight, that somehow something, someone on Mars is cleaning the solar panels, so they have now recovered 100% of their input from the sun in an environment and a place where that should not be happening, and no one knows why.
Actually washed it off, dusted it off, whatever happened.
Yep.
Those panels are clean again.
Yep. Now, I've done some digging into this since our last show, our conversation, and on the anniversary tonight, I can report to you that I think I have solved the mystery.
How?
Well, I turned to a couple of my colleagues, a guy that you probably know, Keith Laney, who is a brilliant imaging guy. He lives in North Carolina. He's done a lot of work for the rover missions through the Ames Research Center. You can see his stunningly enhanced imagery over at the Ames, you know, research site. He and I were talking, you know, a few weeks ago, and he reminded me that in his orbital imagery, when he was helping prepare the landing ellipses for the Opportunity touchdown a year ago, one of the problems was, even though they were getting good imagery on a daily basis from the Mars Surveyor spacecraft, over this Meridiani region, the meridian of Mars where the rover landed, there were inevitably a lot of clouds and ground fog clouding up the pictures taken from orbit. So there was something condensing near the ground. Okay, now that's one data point. Now we fast forward the film to some work by Gil Levin. You remember who Gil Levin is?
I don't remember him.
Levin is the principal biology investigator on the old Viking missions 30 years ago, who has claimed consistently that his experiment found life on Mars. And he has been trying to fly a return mission to look for life, and NASA keeps telling him, go away, Gil, we don't need to hear that. Gil has done a very good analysis of the atmosphere, because for there to be life, you got to have water. You have to have liquid water, as far as we know. And all the models say that there's no liquid water on the surface of Mars. It's too dry, too cold, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, Levin's work trying to get NASA to buy an experiment to put on a spacecraft going has proven, based on both theoretical calculations and laboratory data, that in fact you can have liquid water in the current environment of Mars, albeit very briefly. That right at the surface, at ground level, in the morning when the sun just comes up and steams off the ice that forms during the night,
exactly,
you can have a supersaturated above the dew point condition for a few hours where you have basically a situation where it will frost out or condense out the moisture in the air on cold surfaces.
Sort of like on days in St. Louis, for example, in the Midwest. You wake up in the morning, it might be 10 degrees above zero. You'll have a little ice on your driveway. However, the sun is out and it hits it at a certain angle, it melts it.
Exactly.
And then it freezes a little bit later.
That's right. Now, what I did here, because we live in a desert, is I went out the morning after we did the show and I looked at the windshield on one of our cars. And I noticed that the dust, because we have dust in the air, here in Mexico, that the dust had strange geometry. It had all kinds of little circles with all the dust pushed off to the edge in little tiny lines going around what were the condensation points of the dew. My model for what's going on with Opportunity is that it's dewy at Meridiani. The air is supersaturated with water vapor at those temperatures and pressures, and what's happening is that the water vapor, which condenses on the panels, is literally pushing the dust to the edges and opening up clear little droplets, clear little circles that are kind of like a spider web over the surface of the panel and clearing the dust from the panel, increasing the amount of power, and that's why Opportunity is able to celebrate its one-year anniversary tonight.
Now, eventually, if both those rovers find themselves in areas where this doesn't happen, they'll slowly start to die, I would assume, right?
Opportunity is going to stay in this environment for whatever its life is, because it just can't get that far away. I mean, this covers hundreds and hundreds of square miles, this damp region. Because remember, in our model, Opportunity is sitting on the shoreline of one of my ancient tidal oceans, a la the tidal model.
Right.
And the Pipers coming out of NASA, the JPL, say that this was once the edge of an ancient salty ocean. And there's a guy out of the University of Colorado who has published a paper, brilliant paper, basically saying that for thousands of square miles around here, he sees evidence of this incredible ancient sea. So all our independent investigations are converging on that this used to be a shoreline, which means there's a water underground, and that's what's condensing as fogs and is cleaning, essentially, through that evaporation process, the solar panels and Opportunity. So Opportunity will go, wherever it goes, it will last as long as the mechanical parts, the engines, the little electric motors, the solenoids, the electronic computers. But the energy from the sun, because of this self-cleaning process, is going to keep it going and going and going like a certain bunny.
This is fantastic.
Isn't it?
We've had some just tremendous successes in space lately. I want to get your brief reaction, Richard, to things going on Titan, of course, and also your take. They really haven't talked too much about the flub, which I believe was man-made, was it not, caused by man? weren't there two channels that they were that Huygens was supposed to send signals back to Cassini, and only one of the channels worked for some reason?
Well, one of the channels worked only because of human error, but I don't think it was error. And when we come and do the show I'm going to do on the incredible discovery that we're working on, a la Cassini, and
as soon as you're ready, you let me know.
Well, I will certainly let you know. It's taken longer because we've got to dot all the I's and cross the T's, because this could be, perhaps, George, the most important discovery, if we're right, in the history of the space program, and I'm not, you know, putting you on. This is of that magnitude, so I'm trying to make sure we've done everything we can to check this out. When I come back and do that, which will be in a few days, we're going to talk about the weirdness that happened to Cassini. Because something seemed to have, and I'm going to use this word very specifically, have sabotaged one of those channels radioing back the data from the Huygens probe that landed on Titan. And there's almost no conceivable reason why that should have happened naturally or by accident. And we'll go into the history and the details, and I will lay out a model for what the reason might have been for the audience when we are able to do that.
All right. Now, but we did, I guess, we lost 50% of the data, 50% right?
50% of the data, but 100% of one critical experiment, which was designed to measure something as innocuous as the winds on Titan. But that's not the reason it was sabotaged. The reason is much deeper and far more interesting, and obviously tonight we don't have time to get into
it. I understand.
It.
You're holding this one close to your vest, too, because you're not letting me know.
It's kind of part and parcel with the other thing we're working on in the Saturn system, which is mind-boggling, George. Mind-boggling.
Now let me get your take on this. I didn't have a chance to talk with you about this as well. Since we last talked, after that, it was announced that it looks like they're not going to fund any planned mission. They're not going to fund any robotic mission to try to fix Hubble. They're going to let it die. If anything, they're going to scuttle it.
This is nuts, George. This is absolutely nuts. And again, we need more time because politically it makes no sense. When I was on Capitol Hill last spring, after the president announced he wanted to do the Moon-Mars vision, I went from office to office, Republican congressman to Republican congressman, and the universal reaction I got when I was lobbying basically on behalf of the president and the vision was, well, we don't know whether NASA's really up to the job. You know, it ain't the NASA of the good old days. And it would have been a stunning demonstration of NASA's competence, you know, back in the saddle, has its chop up, has its act together, if they had mounted a full rescue mission and put, you know, more life on this incredible spacecraft, the Hubble telescope, which has given us incredible science, incredible pictures. It has brought NASA closer to more people than anything perhaps since the moon landings or maybe the Mars, you know, landings. And the idea that the White House and NASA wants to kill it, just let it die, makes no sense unless you know, as Paul Harvey used to say, the rest of the story. So we'll get into that when I come back and do more time.
Now, enterprisemission.com, what's new on the website?
We have the latest pictures from Titan, and one of the things I want to ask people is I want you to go to the website. I want you to click on the Tsunami Relief banner, which takes you to the page where we're offering this Godman and ET DVD set, and 10%, $12 of every set is going directly to the Red Cross and to UNICEF for tsunami relief. These people desperately need help. It helps enterprise, it helps yourself, because it puts you in the picture as to why these issues are important, and you can help some people on the other side of the planet that really desperately need our care and concern and our just human American kindness.
Well, you did a good job on the DVD. As a matter of fact, I've been getting some emails from people who've already picked it up or ordered it from you. And, I mean, one guy was so excited he almost broke the box ripping it
open. Oh, my gosh. Can you send those along? I would love to see feedback.
Sure. Absolutely.
I would love to see feedback. And for those who are not on the web, just call 1-800-350-4639. That's 1-800-350-4639. And let's help these people and help ourselves at the same time.
All right, you call me this week when you're ready, okay?
When we are ready, George, you will not believe what we have found.
All right, Richard, thanks. Richard C. Hoagland, a little impromptu visit. We're going to have open lines for you now up until the top of the hour. Here are the phone numbers for you. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line, 818-501-4721. And the wild card line, 818-501-4721. 4109. Now, if you think the sounds of Bigfoot that we play on this program every once in a while are eerie, if you think the sounds of hell are scary, wait until you hear what I'm going to play for you next when we come back on Coast to Coast AM.
The After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505. George Norrie, call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, and get ready. At the top of the hour, our guest will be John Zaffis, top paranormal researcher, nephew of Ed and Lorraine Warren, of Amityville horror fame, of course. We're going to be talking with him about some hauntings, near-death experiences, possessions, and exorcisms, so get ready for that. Hey, the After Dark CD is a one-of-a-kind. That's all I'm doing for the history of Coast to Coast. It includes great bumper music, unforgettable calls to the show, and some ghost stories, H.G. Wells, Edgar Allan Poe, things like that. You can order the After Dark CD, 2.5 hours worth of material, 2 CDs included, by going to www.afterdarkcd.com. That's afterdarkcd.com. Or you can call this toll-free number, 1-800-598-2331. That's 1-800-598-2331. I'm doing a little research today, and then I got an email from someone who wanted me to know that the Tasmanian devil is dying away. So I did a little checking, and indeed I did find that the devastating disease is sweeping through the Tasmanian devil's population, killing more than 90% of the adults in high-density areas. Now, this animal, this Tasmanian devil, cannot be mistaken from any other creature, let me tell you. First of all, it once occurred on the mainland of Australia. Fossils were found there. However, now it is only in Tasmania. It's believed the devil became extinct on the mainland some 600 years ago before Europeans settled on the continent. What I'd like you to hear, though, is something that we uncovered. The screech, the spine-chilling screech of this Tasmanian devil. Listen to this. Now, we've played a lot of sounds on this show before. Sounds of Bigfoot in the wild. Maybe. Sounds of hell. Maybe. But this one for sure is the sounds of a Tasmanian devil. That sounds like an exorcism, doesn't it? How would you like to see that creature later, huh? We're going to keep that. Once in a while, we'll play it. We'll be back in a moment. Tomorrow, I'm going to tell you a story about the St. Joseph statue and how people are using it to sell their homes. Interesting story, but that's tomorrow. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. Where are you calling from?
Hi, George. This is Marcia calling from Van Buren, Arkansas.
Hey, hello, Marcia.
I listen on KWHN 1320 AM.
Great. Great to have you with us.
I wanted to call and tell you about a phone call I got from a dear friend of mine. She passed away about 5 years ago. She was in very poor health, had emphysema. This phone call occurred about 7 years ago. She was in the hospital because of her emphysema. Her blood oxygen levels were extremely low.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about between 9 and 10 o'clock at night. She called me. And she said, I just needed to tell you what's going on. Now, she had a very weird quality to her voice. It was ethereal, like she was at all here. You know what I mean?
Her brain was, but she wasn't. Huh?
Like she was almost between worlds.
Yeah.
I said, what's going on, Ellen? And she started telling me that she could look at her telephone and the color of it was bleeding outside the outlines of the telephone. And as she looked around, the colors of other things were bleeding and streaming around.
So if the phone was, let's say, black, where you see the edge of a phone, she would see it kind of like float away, huh? Almost like water.
Well, she was seeing the black streaming out away from the telephone.
That's weird. All right.
She was not on drugs. She was in there because of her breathing. And you know, they're not going to give someone downers when they can't breathe.
No.
But we were continuing to talk. I was concerned about her. I said, do you need to call a nurse? She said, no. She said, there's a man here in my room. I said, is it an orderly or something? No. I said, what's he doing? Nothing. He's just standing over in the corner. I said, well, tell me what he looks like. She said, I can't really see him. He's got on a long coat, and he's got a hat pulled down over his face. I can't see his face. I said, and he's not doing anything? She said, no. He's just standing there in the corner like he's waiting. And I encouraged her to call the nurse again. She said, no, I don't need a nurse.
She wasn't afraid, was she?
No, she wasn't. And we talked for a few more minutes. She was in the hospital in Van Buren, which is right across the river from Fort Smith, where I lived. And I was saying, Ellen, do you need me to come over to the hospital tonight? No, I'm fine. And we kept talking. And she said, huh. I said, what? She said, he's gone.
He's gone? Like he just disappeared,
That's
gone?
That's what I asked her. I said, well, did he leave the room? No, he just faded away. And, you know, I talked to her some more, and her voice...
And that was 2 years before she died, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Her voice came back to a more normal tone, so I felt more comfortable about not rushing to the hospital. And we hung up. And I guess it was about a year and a half later. I said something about that, about the phone call. She said, what are you talking about?
She forgot?
And I repeated the conversation to her practically word for word. She said, Marcia, I had forgotten all about that. She said, I remember it now. She said, but I still don't have any idea of what was going on or who it was.
I wonder. I just wonder.
I really think she was so close to dying.
Yeah, it was coming together.
He was there to escort her to the other side.
The Reaper.
I wouldn't necessarily call him the Reaper. I was thinking more, her father's dead, and I figured it was her father coming to help her cross.
Is the Reaper necessarily bad?
Well, it's always called the Grim Reaper.
Well, that's because you're dying, I guess.
So,
got to check and see if the Grim Reaper, though, is really bad or not, or just the messenger.
But
it'd be worth looking into.
Tell you what, it was something else. That call, even now talking to you about it, I've got cold chills running over my body.
Well, I
got
to tell you, something indeed happened to her. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's move on to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, this is Heather calling from Columbus, Ohio.
Hi, Heather. What's going on?
I just wanted to share an experience with you because, well, nothing like this has ever happened to me. I thought maybe you or your listeners may have heard something like this happening.
Okay, what?
One night I went to sleep as normal. It was a normal day. There was nothing out of the ordinary on my mind or anything. And it's hard to describe, but I was kind of in a state where I was asleep, but I became aware. And I was aware of this shadowy figure that was in the corner of my room. And it came towards me, and it laughed, and it tried to grab me, and I woke up suddenly. And I thought, okay, this was just a nightmare or something, so I went back to sleep.
A bad nightmare, right?
Right. But then the thing about it is, this happened to me two more times right after, and I kept waking up. But then that third time when I woke up, this shadowy thing was actually there, and I could see it. And it came towards me, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't move. I couldn't scream. And it moved all the way up my body until it was right there in front of my face. And as it moved up, I felt like this cold tingling move up my whole body. And it just, the only way I can describe it is it just felt really like pure evil.
How'd you get rid of it?
Well, I couldn't move for a while. And finally, I reached over, I turned on the light as soon as I could. And even though I couldn't see it anymore, I could kind of feel that it was there.
Yeah, the presence was still around you.
Yeah, and also another thing that kind of adds to the eeriness of it is I had a cat, and the cat was on my bed, and the cat was looking straight up right in the direction where I had seen it.
Cats are very tuned into this.
Yeah.
Very tuned. Well, I'm glad you're okay.
Yeah, me too.
All right, thanks for the story, Heather. Next up, West of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Dave from California.
Hi, Dave.
Hi. I've listened for a while. First time on your program, so it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Sure.
I studied aerospace engineering in college. I currently work on the coast here in Southern California. Recently, been using night vision goggles with my work, and I've never really looked at the sky with them, but you can see forever with the night vision goggles into the sky. About 3 weeks ago, I was outside listening to your radio program and decided to look up in the sky. And about 30 seconds into my observing, I saw about 15 small little points of light moving across the sky at an extremely high rate of speed. And they converged into almost one point of light. And as they went over my head, they broke up into several pieces of light and went out toward the ocean. And I've never seen anything like that before, George, in my life.
Why?
Not at that, well, not that speed.
We know it's not a meteor, right?
And you know what? The meteor showers were happening. And I've seen other meteors, and it was not that at all. It wasn't an airplane. There was no sound. It totally surprised me. So I continued to watch that night, and I had another person with me, and he also continued to watch with his vision goggles. And coming from the coast of California, going inland, we saw another larger point of light streaking across the sky, stop, and then kind of do a small circle, come across our heads, and then went off into the easterly direction. Was not an airplane. So just recently I heard that you kind of saw, I was listening to your radio program, and I heard that you claimed to have seen your first UFO.
I thought maybe I did. I'm still a little puzzled as to what it was, except that I'm a little suspect because it had a blinking red light right on the top of it.
That's what you said.
Yeah.
George, since that time, I actually brought my digital camera with me, and I put the camera up to the lens of the night vision goggles, and I recorded. I was able to record one of the lights that screeched across the sky, and it's definitely. I can't explain it.
Pretty good quality.
You can see the Pleiades stars. and a little bit of Orion, and you can see this light come across the screen. And so it's a large portion of the sky, and this light comes across the screen and moves in the background of the sky. And it's a point of light that moves at a high rate of speed, and it changes direction.
If you didn't have the night vision goggles, would you have been able to see this with the naked eye?
I don't think so, but in the past 3 weeks, I've observed the sky, and I've probably seen maybe about 15, 20 times different points of light that streak across the sky and go different directions. And I've never been really a big believer in like UFO type stories and stuff like that. And now I'm definitely changing my mind.
Well, I'll tell you what you can do if you want to download that into your computer and send it on to Lex, which is Lex at coasttocoastam.com. He'll take a look at it and maybe put it up on our website if the video looks good enough, if you could do that for us. Thanks. Appreciate your call. Wildcard line, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George. This is Cindy again. I called you Friday. I live on the boat in San Diego here, and I kind of got cut off.
What happened to you?
I don't know. Everything just went dead.
You were in the middle of a great story, and you were gone.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you were pirated for some reason.
Oh, no, there's no pirates.
What do you mean there's no pirates? They're out there.
Oh, yeah, right around the Philippines and stuff like that. But, you know, they're usually after the big ships, not us little sailboats.
Yeah, but if I remember, you sailed all by yourself, right?
Yeah, bought the boat in St. Thomas, sailed down through the Caribbean, spent 20 years in the Caribbean as a charter yacht chef.
Well, you were in the middle of telling us a good story, and then poof, off you went. So let's let you get going again here.
Oh, well, I don't remember if it's actually a story, but thing about tsunamis is being on the boat here, I'm in the best position there is possible because maybe it's not true. Some of your people could tell me, but I'm always under the belief that a tsunami comes, and if you're out in the middle of the ocean, it's just a big, giant swell that it's not going to break and do you any harm because it doesn't start breaking and everything.
Until it gets close to shore. Exactly.
Yeah. So... you know, I just was wondering, you know, I've always heard that. I've read it a couple of times. Just, you know, maybe some of your experts would know if that's true or not.
No, it is true, because that was one of the questions I had. I thought maybe with this thing out there at that time that every ship around would get wiped out. Nope, only boats. If you, for example, in your sailboat, God forbid, if you were docked or very close to land, you could be affected. But if you're out in the ocean... you're going to get a bump. That's about it.
Yeah, that's what I figure. So if I hear any warnings, I'll just head out to sea.
Fast.
Yeah, real fast.
Fast.
Well, you know, although I've survived 5 hurricanes, so, you know.
Have you really?
Oh, yeah.
What was the worst one you were in?
Probably Hugo down in St. Thomas.
You were in a boat when that happened, or were you on land?
Oh, no, in a boat. I was on at that point, I didn't own my own boat. I was working on a boat. And there were over at Calibre, which is a great hurricane hole, which is off of Puerto Rico there in between Puerto Rico and St. Thomas. There were probably, I'd say, maybe 850 boats in there. And after the hurricane, there were like 8 left floating.
Oh, my God. Did you think your boat was going to go down?
Yeah. It was pretty scary.
And so you were, what, down there in the bottom, all hatched up, ready to go, huh?
Yeah, life jackets and everything, you know, got all the passports and paperwork and stuff out, you know, to go up on deck, you know, because you got to keep checking lines and stuff because they were just chafing through and popping left to right. You know, you wore your snorkel and mask and snorkel because the wind was blowing
just
so hard.
In case. Well, I'm glad you're okay. Hey, thanks for the stories.
Okay, bye-bye.
Appreciate you being on Coast to Coast. Next up, first-time caller. Hi there.
How you doing, George? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing. No problem.
I got a question for you.
Okay.
And I'm hoping you remember this. A few months ago, late summer, early fall, you took a call from a guy who was telling you about a vacation that him and his family were taking down to Dallas, Texas. He was taking a tour of Dealey Plaza, the site of the Kennedy assassination. He was walking around the area of the grassy knoll. He said that something caught his eye on the ground, like a partially exposed...
It was a bullet or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said he found a shell case.
Yes.
you're asking him, did you show anybody? What happened? What's the deal? And he was calling you from at his home after he had come back from vacation.
Right, right.
He had showed it to no one. And I was wondering if you'd followed up with this, if you'd contacted, you showed you any evidence or sent the casing into you.
He did not send it to us. He was going to send some, he was going to send the casing to us. We have not received it yet. Tommy, our producer, had asked him to send it certified just to make sure it didn't get lost in the mail.
Absolutely.
But it has not shown up at all.
Oh, man, that was interesting. And, you know, I mean, I know how the story sounds, but he told such a good story. It was so believable.
Oh, I believe him. I believe he found something. The question is was it a casing from then? Did somebody drop it years later? Who knows?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, please, if you guys get anything, you know, I'm a pretty regular listener.
You sound like you are a Kennedy assassination buff, aren't you?
Oh, man, I love every show you guys have on that. Yeah, it is kind of one of my pet conspiracy
theories.
Yeah,
me too. And as you well know, every anniversary date, we do a series of roundtable discussions with different experts. And we'll do that again this coming year, too.
I'll be looking forward to it.
Okay, appreciate you being on the program.
Take care.
We do not have time for any more calls this hour, but we're going to open up the phone lines later on tonight when you have an opportunity to talk with John Zaffis. He's written a new book called Shadows of the Dark. It's been a while since we talked with someone who has real strong experience with exorcisms, possessions, and that is what we are going to do with John Zaffis. And his co-writer, of course, was Brian McIntyre. We're just going to be talking to John tonight right here on Coast to Coast AM. So we'll be right back. Why don't you just kind of huddle around, lock the door, and get ready.
To time travel? Go back to past shows on Streamlink. Sign up online at coasttocoastam.com.